Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin our program today by talking with a great Wisconsin author, Bob Wilging. He has written probably like the book on deer hunting in Wisconsin. It's called On the Hunt, The History of Deer Hunting in Wisconsin. That was an earlier book. Most recently, he has another wonderful book out. It's called History of Field, Stories from the Golden Age of Wisconsin's Sporting Life, where he takes a look at years back, kind of the golden age, maybe we could call it, of hunting and fishing, and talks about the lodges, the people, the events that made that era special. Great to have him with us by phone today. And certainly I hope you'll join in as we talk with Bob. Maybe you've got some questions to ask him about what it was like back then. Maybe you have some experiences to share back in your own past that you'd like to talk with us about. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page. You can post a comment or a photo there at the Larry Mueller Show. Bob Wilging, you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Larry.
Hey, it's great to have a chance to talk with you again. I really enjoyed reading your book.
Thanks.
Maybe you could begin by talking about where these stories in your collection came from.
Sure. Kind of the origin of the stories goes back to a column I wrote for Wisconsin Outdoor News, which is a biweekly outdoor hunting and fishing newspaper that is really popular in Wisconsin. And I did a column for about 7 or 8 years, kind of off and on, called History of Field. And for the column, that's what my focus was sporting history. It's something I'm really interested in, is Wisconsin sporting history and Wisconsin outdoor hunting and fishing traditions. And I took about, I guess it has 26 stories, which were the best of the columns, the History of Field columns.
Well, they're wonderful stories, and for me, they brought back a lot of memories, and some of them pretty recent. For example, Pastica's. I don't know how many musky lures I've purchased in Pastica's over the years.
Yeah, and that's what I hope to do with the book, or I guess one of my goals was, you know, for people that are hunters and fishermen and remember, you know, some of the older days, to bring back some of the memories and to reminisce, and also for younger generations that are more modernized, I guess, as far as hunting and fishing goes, to learn some of the traditions, or to learn how, you know, really enjoyable things were when they were less complicated and less modern, I guess.
Yeah. You mentioned Gordon McQuarrie quite a few times. He was a wonderful author, writer, wasn't he?
Absolutely. And he's one of my idols. And I think a lot of outdoor writers in Wisconsin really look at Gordon McQuarrie for the quality of his writing. And he didn't just write about, you know, the hook and bullet type stuff. He really engaged you to feel what he was feeling, or, you know, really got the emotional aspect of what it was like, you know, in those days, in the 30s and 40s, when he mostly wrote. You know, and his stories today, you know, do the kind of the same thing. They provide the tradition and the context of what hunting and fishing was like, you know, back in the good old days.
Yeah, Mary posted on our Facebook page about just that. She said she loved Gordon's McQuarrie's stories of the old duck hunters and their leader, Mr. President, and who was McQuarrie's father-in-law, and their favorite hunting and fishing partners. And he wrote for the Milwaukee Journal in the 50s, I believe.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure when he started at the Journal. I know his stories go back from
way
the 30s,
back,
you know,
yeah,
up to the 50s, and apparently he was, you know, is considered to be one of the first full-time outdoor writers for a newspaper.
Many of your stories illustrate the, you know, how plentiful the fish, the fowl, the other game were in Wisconsin at the turn of the last century. Populations have changed, I expect, and I know some for the better, maybe some for the worse.
Yeah, I think it's kind of both. I think, you read some of the Gordon McCrory stories, and they talk about one of the stories I have in my book, too, about spring duck hunting. You just hear about the fabulous numbers of ducks and the great waterfowling, which we don't really see in Wisconsin anymore. But then, on the other hand, a lot of wildlife, huntable species have come back and are, more abundant now than they were in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah. And there's a theme, I think, in your book or even throughout the book about the power of nature and how untamed Wisconsin was, frankly, not that long ago. I know that you have the Armistice Day storm story from 1940. That's probably about as gripping a story as you can tell. Maybe share a little of that story with our listeners.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the favorite stories of mine in the book. I think it turned out really well.
It did.
Gordon McCrory had written a newspaper article that was kind of the word at the time on the storm. He did a really good job of describing what happened to the hunters that were on the Mississippi River when the Armistice Day storm hit. But when I researched a little bit more to expand on that, I found out that, or kind of discovered that it really affected the whole state, and it was a storm that began, this was November 11th, 1940, and the storm began 1,000 miles away, kind of in the southwest in Oklahoma, Texas, and spread across raced across the prairies. And by the time it got to the Midwest, it was just a howling blizzard and one of the worst storms that anyone at the time had experienced. But the thing that really made it a horrible experience was the duck hunters that were out that day were out in the morning of the storm. Was perfect, warm, kind of bluebird day weather, and guys were out there without any heavy clothing, and it was just kind of another day of poor duck hunting weather. And when the storm began to roll in, they thought, well, that's great, and it's going to push some ducks down and move the ducks around. But it caught everybody. It was so severe and came on so fast that it caught everybody off guard. And like I said, McCrory wrote about the Mississippi River, but it raced across the state, and anybody, that was out on some of the inland favorite duck hunting places like Lake Winnebago and Butamore to the eastern part of the state, the same thing happened there. A lot of rescue efforts and a lot of people ended up dying because of the severity of the storm and being stuck out on the water, and the gale force winds and temperatures had really dropped from like 60 degrees in the morning to near zero at night with horrendous wind chills. And then the storm moved out to Lake Michigan and sunk a couple boats where all hands on the boats were lost. And it really was more than just the duck hunters on the Mississippi. And I thought that was really fascinating to see the impact on the entire state.
Yeah, absolutely. Robert Wilging, our guest today, his new book is History Afield, Stories from the Golden Age of Wisconsin Sporting Life. Great to have him along. And certainly if you have a question or comment or a remembrance to share from that time period that we're talking about in relation to hunting and fishing and the outdoors, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And maybe you could give our listeners sort of the range of topics that you have covered here. I really, you've got some great lodge stories. You've got a great story on the Rhinelander Boat Company. Go ahead. And a couple of presidents and a stripper as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the first book I wrote on the hunt, that the history of deer hunting in Wisconsin, that really just focused on deer hunting and the evolution of deer hunting in the state. And some of the sidebars that I had in that book also came from the History of Field column that I wrote for Wisconsin Outdoor News. So all the deer hunting things, the columns with deer hunting emphasis were pretty much found their way to On the Hunt. But I had a whole bunch of other things that, exactly like you said, you know, are really varied and go from some of the early sporting goods stores like Postica's that you mentioned and Mills Trading Post in Rhinelander. And one theme for a while was the early resorts. And
the Northern Air was one, Teal Lake Lodge.
Yep, some of the more traditional mom-and-pop resorts, how they kind of came about at the turn of the century. And then the Northern Air is another one of my favorite stories, is kind of the opposite of the mom-and-pop resorts, where Carl Marty had this dream to make the most luxurious resort, you know, something you would find in Chicago, you know, in the North Woods. And that's a great story, too, and his connection to wildlife. He wasn't so much a hunter. He's kind of against hunting and trapping, but his story is still really interesting with his connection to where he would raise orphaned animals, and there's always animals, deer and bears, walking around the resort, and that is really interesting. And like you said, too, the two presidents that came to Wisconsin, Eisenhower and the Minocqua area, came here several times, was a friend of Howard Young in Minocqua, and then Calvin Coolidge actually set up the White House for 3 months on the Brule River in Douglas County and operated the country out of a lodge on the Brule River.
That was an amazing story. And when he left, he didn't, I think he left an autographed picture or something, didn't he? That was about it.
The guide, John LaRock, his guide for the entire summer, that's all he got was an autographed picture of the president.
Yeah. Oh, boy. We have Shelley in Cumberland who has a comment or question. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, I have a comment. One Christmas, I found a compilation of Mr. McQuarrie's stories in a book. Got it from my father, who was an avid duck hunter. And he passed away last November. But a lot of the memories that the grandkids have are him reading these stories to them like they were fairy tales. And it was nice to pass that down.
Oh,
that's great.
Thank you. Thank you for calling his. I've read his entire collection as well, but never have read it to kids. And I think that's a great memory for you, Shelley. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you've got some great stories in your book, as we've been talking about here. And I'll have you think about the Meps Fishing Lure Company story, because that, I think, is a great story. I've caught a lot of fish on Meps lures. And so the story about how Meps came to Wisconsin is a good one. And we'll take that up and take your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Robert Wilging. Bob's got a new book out. It's called History of Field, Stories from the Golden Age of Wisconsin Sporting Life. And I'll tell you some wonderful stories from the turn of the century, when hunting and fishing was really getting going here in the state. And he's got some great stories in the book, and I'm pretty sure you're going to love reading about them. Questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Dave in Augusta next. Dave, hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Great topic. I remember hearing something about a famous stripper, Rose Lee, that came to northern Wisconsin on vacation, I believe. She went out with a fishing guide, an older man, and she caught her first muskie, I believe. on I forget what Channel Lakes it was, but by listening to him telling the story, I met him in northern Wisconsin shortly before he died, and he recanted the story for me. It was really hilarious. If you have any details of how she got a little warm in the boat and she ended up taking her jacket off, and the guide says getting really nervous, just really, really nervous. He didn't know what to do, and she turned around, and she had her shirt in a bow in the front midway up, which was back in the 40s, was kind of risque. And she went out, and she bound one of his lures, and she did catch, I think it was a 40-inch muskie. So yeah. that was kind of cool.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Dave. And I'm glad you brought back Gypsy Rose Lee to the discussion, because I did mention it. And, Bob, you recount her story in the book.
Yeah, that's part of the story about the Northern Air. She was a frequent visitor, I think, to the Northern Air in Three Lakes, Carl Marti's resort. And I do have some newspaper quotes from the trip, one of her trips where she caught that muskie, probably the one that the caller is talking about. And
she loved to fish.
She did. And she spent, sounds like she spent quite a bit of time, or, you know, took her vacations to the Northern Air, and that's what Carl Marti, you know, promoted, was celebrities and well-known people coming to the Northern Air, as well as the locals, or, you know, people from within the state that went there too.
Yeah.
But there is a picture of Gypsy Rose Lee too towards the back of the book. So.
Yes, there is. Actually, is it on the back cover?
I think it is.
Yeah, it is. I've got it right here. Yeah, she's got her. Yeah, she's got a nice muskie there.
Yeah, and that's from the Northern Air in Three Lakes.
So. Oh, man. Paul in Fifield, let's go to you now. Hi, Paul.
Oh, hey, Larry. Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, I used to work there in Rhinelander with you back in the summer of 1992.
Okay.
Paul Storm.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we, you know, live trapped and relocated some bears, you know, the nuisance ones once in a while.
Yeah, I remember those that summer.
Yeah. So here's the question. So this bear they got down there on Highway 8 last bear season.
Okay.
You know that one, that world record one, the 700-pounder?
I heard about it, yeah.
Okay. Is it possible, here's the question. Is it possible that bear that used to be in my yard 10 years ago moved down there? Because it was a really big one.
I don't know. Bear are certainly capable of moving long distances, Bob.
Right. Definitely they can move, and a bear can, you know, live that long too. Generally, you know, the bigger bears get taken during hunting seasons, but... It's, you know, anything like that, I think, is possible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have David in Mozanie next. David, hi to you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was wondering why my dad would talk about their hunting expeditions to Butternut, Wisconsin. This would be in the late 30s and 40s until a few years ago I read an article. And we're from the central Wisconsin area. The central Wisconsin area, like Portage County, basically had no white-tailed deer back then.
Right.
But everything was up north, so all these guys and their buddies would go up north to hunting deer.
Yeah.
They had to go. Compared to now, where the deer in central Wisconsin are bouncing off of cars all over the place.
Yeah. Comment, Bob?
Yeah, the situation really changed there into the 40, or into the 50s and 60s, but you're absolutely right. You know, in the 30s... a lot of the central and southern Wisconsin counties were actually closed, had no deer hunting at all. You know, up into Marathon County was closed for several years, and the population, you know, had been not completely eradicated, but really reduced. And the deer were where the habitat was, and fewer hunters, and that's in the north. After the logging, the brush came back, and deer populations were really good up north. So for a long, long time, the traditional Wisconsin deer hunt was a northern hunt, And then that kind of flipped around to where, as the north got revegetated and central Wisconsin, the deer came back, that, you know, that's where central and southern Wisconsin is where the big deer populations are now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate your call, David. Thank you so much. I want to give Rod in Weyerhaeuser a chance to join in. Thank you, Rod, for calling.
Yeah, I was listening there. My dad just turned 89, so I mean, if he has stories to tell, about deer hunting and musky fishing and all that stuff, I mean, you could just go on and on and on. Anyhow, he says they grew up on a farm. At that time, there was the six boys. The youngest one wasn't born yet, but anyhow, they'd draw straws to see who was going to do the chores. You see, stick around, feed the cows and animals. Well, that particular time, my dad got it, and he had to stay home. Well, there was no deer around the settlements, he said, at that time. See, up we're near Weyerhaeuser, Highway 8.
Yeah.
And then the Blue Hills, it's 7 miles from Highway 8 north to County Road F, and that's up in the Blue Hills. Well, anyhow, they would walk, and at 7 miles, they would have to walk from here to 7 miles, that's where they started the hunt. And you think about today, with these four-wheelers, they got to go an eighth of a mile on a four-wheeler, you know. Like my dad said, it's just so different, you can't even explain it. But anyhow, the quirk of the story is, there was a straggler deer here and there around the settlements, and he grabbed a .35 Remington. It was his brother's. He didn't have one yet. And he went to the neighbors, crossed the fence. He was just crossing a barbed wire fence. And he saw this, and there was that big rack, you know. And pow, he got him. He was halfway crossing through the fence, and he got him. But here, you know, that's the point. You know, he said they had a walk because there was no deer around here. He said, if you saw in one track and you wanted it, you got on that track and you just stayed on it, you know. They didn't learn how to eat corn yet or something.
That's a great story, and that's, you know, kind of my emphasis in the book, too, is the simpler times before ATVs and all the equipment and things we have today that, people had to really be involved and work, you know, for the hunt, and that's what I want to try to preserve, you know, from the stories that he could tell, you know, from those past days. That's, you know, what I hope, you know, younger people hear, that it's not as easy as they may have learned, you know, hunting, and I think, you know, hopefully by learning the old ways or some of the old traditions, people will get back into, you know, learning woodcraft and putting more time into, you know, learning about the animal and how to hunt the animal instead of their equipment and, you know, the more modern things we have available today for hunting and fishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments or maybe a story to tell at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to the Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I have an email from Carol. My husband and I were traveling north of La Crosse recently, Galesville maybe, and we crossed a bridge that he identified as Hunter's Bridge. He tried to relate the facts of a two-car crash involving duck hunters and multiple fatalities. That's a story I don't know, Bob. Do you know that story?
No, I've never heard of that.
Well, that's another one for your next book.
Yeah, that's definitely one to look into. I'm going to be over that way later this fall, too, so I'll have to check into that.
Yeah, you're gonna have to look that one up. Well, you know, not only the hunting has changed so much, but the fishing. I mean, the rods and reels that I use today and the fishing line, back in the day when Eisenhower was there, I think they used to, at the end of the fishing day, they would pull the line all out and dry it out.
Yeah, that could be. I'm not real sure what kind of line they would have used back then, but that sounds like something they would have had to do.
Sounds like something they would have would have done, that's for sure. A very unique chapter in Wisconsin sporting history is that of the American Water Spaniel. That's a wonderful hunting dog breed that was developed right here. And what's so special about the American Water Spaniel? You have a nice piece on that.
Yeah, that was really interesting, and that's something I learned a lot about. A lot of people will go through New London and maybe see the sign where there's a historical marker there that says that New London is the home or the birthplace of the American Water Spaniel. And I didn't know a lot about that, but these are the kind of things that get me curious and lead to a column or a chapter in the book. And I met up with some American Water Spaniel breeders from the Poinette area, and they have passed on now the Barths at Swan Lake Kennels, but their daughter still runs the kennel. And I learned a lot about the spaniel from them, and basically it's one of the few dog breeds that is American or was developed in the United States, and this one is unique to Wisconsin. And it was kind of a little brown spaniel that existed from the days of the market hunters on some of the famous waterfowl areas in Wisconsin, like Lake Butamore and Winnebago and the Great Lakes. And then Doc Pfeiffer from New London is credited as taking that little brown water spaniel and selectively breeding it to be the American Water Spaniel, which it's a great hunting dog, I've heard. I've never had one or hunted with one, but it's an all-around hunter. It was kind of bred to be the market hunter's dog that could get through swamps and thickets, and it's kind of a smaller dog with curly brown hair, and it, you know, its heritage is the market hunting, you know, tough little dog that can do everything, and that's what hunters like about it, is its versatility and its size, great disposition, and it's a dog that Wisconsin can lay claim to.
Yep, absolutely. And Ray in Land O'Lakes has a comment or question. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I want to basically talk about I'm getting up in age now, and I'm, you know, in the 60s, and I want to comment on how I was brought up in some of the Quicks background. I remember when we would go up from Milwaukee area up to, like, the Nicolet and different areas like that where there were no deer, and we would visit all these hunting camps, and just the stories and the honor system and how everybody helped each other with the deer hunting and the code of ethics that we had back then, and just honoring everything and being respectful. And I'm very grateful for those old-timers who are long passed on now, but that's quite a history that we had in Wisconsin. Everybody has known some of these old-timers, and I just want to, you know, do a tribute to all of them and then to thank them for showing me a wonderful world and being respectful of sportsmanship in all areas of hunting. And that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you for calling. Comment, Bob?
Yeah, I think those are great comments. I agree with everything the caller said, that, you know, that's what we don't see so much today, is that the ethics and the traditions, you know, of the past, and I think it's really important to, you know, to document those. And in the introduction to History of Field, I pay tribute to the old timers too, because that's kind of how I got interested in the sporting history, and, you know, just talking to people that had been there, you know, turn of the century or later, you know, 20s and 30s, and Wisconsin has so many great stories that are out there, but unfortunately, you know, as the old timers leave us, you know, they keep the stories to themselves, or the families have the stories, but they're just not put on paper or any place accessible. And that's, you know, really what I try to do, is to you know, keep these stories out there for people to learn that the old ways, you know, were good too, even if you didn't, you know, see 50 deer in a day. Just the camaraderie of the deer camp or the traditions of the hunt were what were really important to people.
Yeah, absolutely. Helgi in Arkdale, we turn to you now. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Yeah, I got a story to tell about the old timers back in the 20s and 30s in Adams County, Portage, and Wood when they went deer hunting. There weren't a lot of deer around, but they would, we had sand roads. So they would drive around on the sand roads and count the number of deer tracks going into a quarter section or section, and they'd count the tracks coming out. And they would decide if it's worth hunting.
That's one I haven't heard before. Have you heard that one before, Bob?
No, that's a great story.
Thanks, Elgie. Appreciate it. Wayne in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. Yes, I'd like to make a comment about how great Wisconsin is in the outdoors. For many, many years, Wisconsin had the world record muskie, and Wisconsin had the world record whitetail buck. For many, many years, they had that until the whitetail buck was defeated by Saskatchewan, Canada, and the muskie was defeated by New York, United States of America. And I think it's time that those two world records come back to Wisconsin.
Do you think that'll ever happen, Bob?
I don't know.
I think the world record muskie might come back, but
yeah, I think it would be possible. I know, you know, there's more and more people are after record book deer and fish, and you know, Canada is definitely a big contender for both of those, especially on the whitetail end of things.
The thing, I think the fishing ethics have changed, at least when it comes to muskie fishing, I think kind of for the better in a lot of ways. You have some pictures of the Eisenhower brothers. Well, they had a half a dozen muskies all hooked up. And nowadays, with the catch-and-release philosophy, there's more of a chance for the larger fish to, for a fish to get big enough.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the golden age wasn't always better for as far as take and things like that. I think we have progressed a lot with fishing ethics, catch and release, like you said.
I certainly think so. Ed in La Crosse, we go to you next. Hi, Ed.
Hello. See, that in 1940, the reason so many people got stuck out there was nobody had any idea that this storm was coming. That was put in. They did not report the weather forecast back because they were on like a war, you know, because of the war over in Europe. And they did not report it. They knew that it was coming, but the people never knew it here. They got just a horrible storm, and as you said, it was like 60 degrees, and it went down into the like 20 degrees and below that. Well, it was below that. My dad was out in it.
Oh boy! Yeah.
But he didn't get home till like 3-4 in the morning. But he made it.
Oh, he made it.
Where was he hunting at?
Well, it would be. Well, he called it Round Lake. I believe he was in that area, but I am not sure. I was a kid then, a little kid. Mm-hmm. And when he came home, I can remember he had his ducks in that, too. He was the type of guy that would help anybody.
Yeah, and there was some help, and people did display that during that storm. But in a lot of ways, too, it was like you were kind of by yourself, or, you know, there weren't a lot of people around you because you were hunting, and so you were on your own, weren't you, Bob?
Yeah, definitely. It was small groups of people or even single hunters out there that got caught. And that's a really good point that the caller makes, too, and that's something I learned while doing some more research for the article, was it wasn't the National Weather Service at the time, but the precursor to that in Chicago was really, I think, criticized after this for not getting the word out to people, you know, on the radio. And I think as a result of the storm, they did make some major changes in weather reporting as a result of the, you know, there was, I think, nearly 200 or 160 or so lives lost due to this. So, you know, back in 1940, this was one of the worst storms ever.
Mm-hmm. Ed, thank you. Bob in Shell Lake, let's go to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My question is about a resort owner at Webb Lake, Wisconsin, Ivor Johnson. Would you recall anything about him?
Boy, you know, that name sounds really familiar, but I can't think of...
You remember the name of the resort?
I just think it was Ivor Johnson's Resort. We stayed there, my dad and I. We lived in Rice Lake, and it was just easier hunting because we hunted in that area, so we would stay at the resort. And the reason I called was that he had done something, and I can't pin... Anyway, he had survived some outrageous thing in the wintertime.
Mm.
Where he got trapped someplace along Lake Superior and had to walk his way out. And it was just a miraculous story, but I just thought maybe you might have heard about it.
No, I don't think I have, but that Ivor Johnson, the name sounds familiar, and well, it sounds like something I'd want to look into. And it sounds a little similar. I have a story in the book about escaping from an ice cake or an ice floe that broke off in Chequamegon Bay in Lake Superior. It sounds like what you're saying is kind of similar to that, where fishermen had to kind of race for their lives. Or,
yep.
And some of them, you know, barely survived this ice floe that was being pushed out to sea, basically, or out to the middle of the lake.
Thanks for calling, Bob. Appreciate it. And here we are running out of time, and I know you've got some upcoming signings and readings Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th.
Yep. On this upcoming weekend, I'll be at the Cedarburg Wine and Harvest Fest at Creekside Books. They'll be selling books, and I'll be signing books there in the afternoon on Saturday and the morning of Sunday.
And then the 22nd, you're going to be at Chilton Public Library?
Chilton Library on the 22nd at 6 p.m. And the Monday after that, I'll be at the Rhinelander District Library, too, at 6:30 p.m. signing books.
On the 26th?
On the 26th.
Right. Bob, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Always glad to be here.
Bob Wilging is the author of History Afield, Stories from the Golden Age of Wisconsin Sporting Life. Coming up, we're going to take a look at some stories from, or a story from, the golden age of Wisconsin agriculture, we might call it, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.